My talk this morning is from the chapter from the book New Design for Living by Ernest Holmes and Willis Kinnear, and it's the chapter called Discovering Yourself. And I have been having the most fun with this talk because I keep getting inspirations as to where to go with it and how to approach it. And my most recent inspiration came about a half an hour ago when I saw what Michael Bowers posted to Facebook this morning. So that's where we're going to start. He posted this quote from the New York Times newsletter. Do you often ask yourself, what time is it? What day is it? Why am I standing in front of the refrigerator staring at an old clove of garlic? I might insert, why can't I remember the lyrics of a song that I've been singing for 20 years? I know I resemble these remarks, and the article went on to say, you are not alone. A year of uncertainty and loss has left many people in a kind of fog. One expert said that state could lead to anhedonia, or the loss of ability to take pleasure in activities. Another said that the pandemic's longevity has contributed to the sense that time is moving differently and has dulled our ability to form meaningful new memories. Resilience seems in short supply. So with Jackson Marvin Beauregard from that song, it's time for our next reinvention. There is always the opportunity to not only discover ourselves, but rediscover ourselves and discover our power. And that's what this chapter is about. When I first thought about giving this talk, before I even read the chapter, I was given a very strong impulse to start this talk with a story that I absolutely love. And I went to the book that this story comes from. It's called Small Graces by Kent Nerburn. And I discovered the story isn't in this book. And I've looked through so many of my books and I can't find it. I know I didn't make it up, but it's still the greatest story I know. So I'm going to tell you this story. It's about a man who was working from home. He was a writer. And his little tiny son, 3 or 4 years old, tugged at him and said, Daddy, come, Daddy, come. And he took him to the front door and he pointed up at the evening star. And the dad said, yeah, yeah, I got to go back to work. And the little boy stomped his foot and stared in his daddy's face and said, fiercely, you be glad of that star. You be glad of that star. And that's resilience, is learning to be glad of the star. We are ever presented with one opportunity after another to be glad of the star. My friend Margie White always said, life is in the details, and there's something in every scene that sparkles. And you can look for the sparkles, or you can look for whatever else is going on. And Abraham said something very powerful about that. Let me find the quote. They said, we want you to hear us when we say there's a whole lot of observation going on here. Observation and then commenting on what you're observing is not deliberate creation. We just want you to know that you can't get to a better place by constantly commenting on the place where you're standing. The law of attraction follows your gaze. Your vibration follows your gaze. The law of attraction follows your vibration. Your emotion follows your vibration. So observing what's going on is not the answer to changing your life. Imagining something different, focusing on the sparkle, and allowing the sparkles to grow by law of attraction. And when I finally did read the article, read the chapter a couple of weeks ago, I realized that the chapter is about law of attraction. So that was perfect. And we will talk more about what Ernest said about that. But first, I want to say that a couple of months ago, I met a new friend online, and we've been talking about mindfulness and simple moments. And yesterday, I said, it keeps changing this talk. Yesterday, he said, savoring simple moments is like putting money in your piggy bank. Over the years, you have built a treasure in both. And so being glad of the star and savoring that moment is putting treasure in our piggy bank of life. It's creating that treasure of resilience, that wonder in life that we can approach life with. And what we look for, we find. If we look for things going wrong, we can find endless things going wrong. There are endless things going wrong all the time. But there are also endless things going right all the time. And as we look for the things going right, we attract those things going right. And Ernest said, the law of attraction in this chapter, the law of attraction means that we attract into our experience conditions and situations corresponding to the nature and content of our thought. Perhaps we need to switch off the action of some of our patterns of thought and switch to others. So what is being attracted to us is not all bad, not half bad and half good, but all good. We need to be selective in the types of thoughts we entertain in our minds, thus giving only good ideas the power of attracting their like in our experience. And then he talked about where our power lies. And I found this particular two sentences very important. Ernest said, we all stand at the gateway of our minds, at the master control board of our experience, at the drafting board of our new design for living. Nobody else has access to them. Isn't that powerful? We are in control. We get to choose where we focus. And law of attraction follows our gaze. And so as we focus on that which is beautiful, we attract more beautiful. As we focus on that which is distressing, we attract more distressing. And the essence of life, the potential for resilience lies in finding that star and being glad of that star. It's such a simple idea, such a simple idea. It seems too simple. But my friend that talked about the piggy bank then said, recognizing a simple moment is the first step. Appreciating it is the second step. Remembering it is the third step. And each step brings you joy. And for the last year, I've been every day going to the park and taking pictures of nature, mostly birds. And I have become completely enamored with birds, as many of you know. And the birds bring me joy. And the essence of the experience has been so profound because I see the bird and I feel joy. And I get the bird in my viewfinder and click on it, and I feel joy. I click on it, two or three or five dozen times sometimes. And I get home and literally some days have hundreds of pictures to look at. One day I saw 22 species at Claudemore Park, and man, I had 400 pictures that day. And I don't know which picture is going to be good, so I take lots of them, and usually at least one of them is recognizable, particularly of birds I don't know, so that I can go to the app called iNaturalist with a picture and have it tell me what bird it is. That's such a relief. And so that getting home with my camera with 400 pictures on it, or some days 35 pictures on it, and sitting down and looking through those pictures and seeing that that one beautiful one is transcendent. There is a moment that I captured where the joy I felt shows in the picture. And I've had friends say that they look at my pictures and they feel the joy that I felt when I saw the bird. And I have one friend who said on Facebook, "I take your pictures over to my mother's house every day, and it makes her happy to see them." That is such a joy to me, that I get the picture, I choose it, I share it on Facebook, I tell the story of how I saw it, and as I walk in the park, I realize that I am taking at least a segment of my 1,200 friends on Facebook with me to the park that day. And every day somebody sees the pictures. You know, some days I hear from 100 people that they saw the pictures, some days I hear from 5, but somebody sees the pictures and shares the experience of seeing that bird, and that brings me joy. That essence. So that becomes like the fourth step. My friend said recognizing the simple moment is the first step, appreciating is the second step, remembering is the third step, and for me, sharing it is the fourth step. And each of those steps all along the way is a joy. And for many years before I was taking pictures, I had a practice of finding friends who would say, "Yes, call me anytime to tell me a story about joy. If you're feeling joy, I want to hear the story." And so cultivating people that you can speak to about joy is priceless, because as you tell the story, you reinforce it. You're more likely to remember it. If you write it in your journal, you're more likely to remember it. And having those moments of transcendent joy to remember is just an incredible piggy bank of love in your life that you can access again and again and again. So in our second half, I'm going to ask you to maybe share a moment of joy that you've experienced. It could be out in nature, it could be with a grandchild, it could be on a vacation, it could be anywhere. But if we share those moments of joy, we amplify them in our lives, and by law of attraction, make it more likely that we'll have more of them. It's a win-win-win-win-win situation. So I'm all for sharing that. Rumi said, "It is time to speak of roses and pomegranates and of the ocean where the pearls are made of language and vision, and of the invisible ladders which are different for each person that leads to the infinite places where trees murmur among themselves." I can breathe that in all day. To feel that infinite ladder to the places where trees murmur among themselves. To be out in nature and feel that essence. I walk out on the shore at next to the lower pond at Claudemore Park almost every day, and I just open my heart to the park and I say, I love you, my trees. I love you, my water. I love you, my fish and my turtles and my sunshine or my clouds and my sky and my park. I love you, my park. And I say, park, I invite you to love me back. And the birds come and pose for me. And even though I'm not the greatest at finding them in the viewfinder, sometimes it takes me a while. Many of them are very patient with me to let me find them and take pictures of them so I can share them. It's all about sharing love and feeling love. You know, in this year when there have been very few people that I could hang out with, the whole idea of sharing love has been just amazing, because I found that I could make friends with herons and mockingbirds and hawks and feel my love flowing, even though there was no person to hug. I could have eye contact with a Phoebe like I did yesterday, and I can feel the love. And that's such an extraordinary experience. What Ernest started out with this chapter with was a powerful statement. Even though life does become uniquely individualized at every point of expression, the expression is always consistent with and in conformity to a basic unity that runs through all things. Fundamentally, we as individuals are never separated from that which created us. Everyone has access to the living spirit, which is personal to him and at the same time surrounds him with universal law that acts impersonally. These are the two great realities of life, person and principle, spirit and law, or the thing and the way it works. There is a point of contact in our mind with the infinite. We have a point of contact with the infinite. We are a point of contact with the infinite. And as we allow love to flow, as we turn within and feel peaceful in a moment, as we connect with that energy of spirit and align with it anywhere through anything, through music, through knitting, through love in any form, however we are experiencing it, we are connecting with that infinite aspect of ourselves. And the more we do that, the better it feels. The way we want to be is to feel that essence of life within us. And Abraham said recently, the first day of March, they said, you're never... No, it wasn't recently. It was 2014, so it was 7 years ago, the 1st of March. They said, you're never going to come to the end of your pile of desires. Every time a desire is born within you and you line up with the feeling of it, not the feeling of the absence of it, it will flow easily into your experience. So focusing on feeling allows law of attraction to bring us more things that feel like that. And as I feel joy day after day through my focus of attention on the birds in the park, I notice that I experience joy at home. The bunny comes and sits in my backyard most days, and the robin lands on my back fence. And my camellia has 100 pink blossoms on it, and the grape hyacinths are in bloom, and the hyacinths are in bloom, and there's 100 daffodils out there for me to look at. Spring is here, and it's magnificent. And I practice joy all through the winter, And now that spring is here, it's innate in me. It's trained in me to see the joy in the flowering trees and all of the beauty that surrounds me. But I trained myself, I trained that part of my brain to focus, and I kept my gaze focused on where the love was flowing. And it's a practice. It doesn't happen overnight. Our culture isn't oriented toward showing us the beauty of life. Our culture is organized and oriented toward showing us the problems of life. And I said to the beloved, what if I never focus on the problems, how will anything get fixed? And they said, feel the difference between focusing on the problem and focusing on the solution. And that's what Abraham was talking about. How will the solution feel? The solution feels like love. The solution feels like seeing the wholeness in everything that we look at. The Abraham workshop yesterday made me cry three times. But the first time they were talking to an Asian person who emigrated to the U.S. from China, immigrated into the U.S. from China 30 years ago, and had a very powerful experience of being included in the American culture and getting to go to school and become successful and make progress in her career over a 30-year lifespan, and has been so grateful to live in this culture. And she was invited and required by her job to go to a series of workshops on including diversity, but which was focused on the essence of racism in the U.S. And people came and talked about racism for the entire time, and she felt more and more depressed because she could, in that environment, remember examples of things that could have been interpreted as racism. But she said, in my life, the vast majority of my experience was people who included me, people who supported me and uplifted me and loved me. And she said, that's who I want to think about. But I have 26 more of these meetings I'm required to go to at work. How am I going to maintain my way of looking at this culture if I hear these stories every week for 26 weeks? And what Abraham said to her just made me cry. They said, we will go with you to every one of those meetings. And that is the story of life. Spirit, God, Source is with us at every one of those meetings and at every moment. And if we focus on the love, if we focus on how we want to feel, if we embrace the world with love, then we are adding to the solution. And the problems are big enough. We don't need to add our force to the law of attraction bringing more problems. We can add our force, our love, our power to the law of attraction bringing more solutions. And we can focus on advocating for what's wanted rather than protesting what isn't wanted. There's importance in the protests. They are never negating the importance of protest, but they're saying the answer doesn't come from the protest. The answer comes from turning and focusing on the solution. And David Hawkins in Power Versus Force talked about the power of people who are able to advocate in the love frequencies. Abraham says, one who is connected is more powerful than a million who are not. So it doesn't take everyone to change their focus. It just takes a few to tip the energy of the planet toward love. And that's what I would advocate that we do. And I would bring you a piece from the Science of Mind textbook from Ernest Holmes, which always makes me cry. Bethany says it's okay because I cry every time. So thank you, Bethany, for permission to cry. Ernest said, my love goes out to everyone in the world. I do not exclude anything, for I love all nature and everything that is. My love warms and lightens everything it touches, and it goes out into all places. The love flowing through me is a power to all who come in contact with it, and all feel and know that I love. Love within me is complete and perfect. Love within me is complete and perfect too. And love within you is complete and perfect. We each have that power. We each have that extraordinary gift that we can share. We can share. And Ernest, in Words That Heal Today, said, descending from this spiritual altitude, we carry back with us into the marketplace and highways and byways of human endeavor some echo of the beauty of that celestial palace we have entered. That gives me tingles in my crown chakra. The celestial palace is where the love is, where the peace is, where the beauty is, where the heart is. We are that. We are that. And focusing on that means that everywhere we go, we carry with us that beautiful light, that powerful love that touches the people that we see as we focus on appreciation. We are more beautiful. We radiate light. And people can feel it. Abraham says that just walking by someone when you're focused on appreciation uplifts their spirit. The energy of love at the human level. The beloved says, you greatly underestimate the value of a fully open human heart. We have the capacity to open our love and change the world. Open our hearts to love and make things better. And I choose to add love. I choose to savor the simple moments and add them to my piggy bank and remember them and share them as much as I possibly can, because I know that treasure isn't just for me. That treasure is for anyone I can touch, anyone who is able to feel the power of who we truly are. And that power is love. And we access that power by choosing our gaze, choosing our focus, and getting law of attraction to leverage more to love, more beauty, more sparkle, more grace in our lives. And that, to me, Michael dear, is the answer to resilience. That is how we uplift ourselves and find, even in these times of chaos and sadness, the opportunity to be uplifted ourselves and to share that with everyone else. So that's what I wanted to say today. It's an incredible gift to have the opportunity to share with you guys, to be invited to speak and to see what comes when I choose to answer the call. So thank you all. I love you.